How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
And we're live. Welcome to the Lakers Lounge. This is not Lakers late night. It is in the middle of the afternoon. We have a special treat, though. It's been forever. For one, it's an extra special day because it's National Send a Nude Day. So I'm gonna go ahead and take off. No, I'm not gonna do that. It's not that kind of show. That's for the actual late night show. I am joined
new viewers. It's not. He doesn't do that on the late night show. Please watch it. I promise he won't take his clothes off.
Or sorry if you're disappointed. You're not disappointed.
Nobody was disappointed.
In case it has been a really long time, so in case you're wondering who either of us are, I am Anthony Irwin. I usually host this shindig, and then I am joined by my co-host, Harrison Fagan. How have you been?
Pretty good. We haven't spoken since the last podcast when Byron Scott got fired. And so a lot's happened since then. I thought it was about time we talked and hung up the feud and got back to podcasting.
Yeah. I got a little sick and I said I was going to, you know, recover on injury time. And then you took issue with that. And then here we are.
Yeah.
All right. So the way we're going to do this, there are two major stories since the last time that we were on the air. There is Luke getting hired, and then there is keeping the Lakers pick in the lottery and staying at the number two spot, not falling down to number three, not four, not five, not six, not seven. But they stayed at number two. So I am going to make the argument. Well, you go ahead and you go first. Which do you think is the bigger story and why?
So I think that them getting the number two pick is the bigger story. Number one, because it's kind of found money after the worst season in Lakers history. Because I was talking about this yesterday on the Limited Upside podcast when I went on. No Lakers fans and no Lakers analysts thought that they were going to be this bad. I think most people didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. Most people didn't think they were going to be this bad, the second worst team in the NBA. And so to get a reward for that, for having to sit through that and to help their team kind of bounce back, I think was huge rather than getting nothing. It wouldn't have been the end of the world if they didn't get the pick, but it's a big deal that they're getting something. And also the fact that it's the second pick in what's pretty much considered a two-player draft. And so you figure one of these guys, either Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons, is going to be able to come in and make a difference. And while I think Luke Walton, and I'm going to get into this in a piece I have coming later this week, actually, I think Luke Walton was a great coaching hire. I think he's going to make a huge difference in the organization based off of everything that we're hearing. But I just think that, as cliche as it is, players are the ones out there on the court and players make a bigger difference. And I think that getting Ben Simmons or getting Brandon Ingram is going to be a bigger deal for the Lakers franchise than replacing Byron Scott.
I completely agree on the overriding point that players are generally more important than coaches. Coaches, I think, like even the best coach in the league is worth only a few wins. It's not by that much. All you want to avoid is the kind of coach that costs you a bunch of wins, and we just experienced that with Byron Scott. The reason I would argue that Luke is to me the bigger story, and do you want to talk semantically about what's the bigger story and what's more important? Because I could agree with you that it's more important that they keep the pick, but I think the bigger story is Luke Walton.
Oh, so we're having a semantic difference.
Well, no, I mean, either way, because I could even argue that Luke is more important to a certain extent, but I'll say the biggest.
I kind of agree. I would say that the second overall pick is both. And I say that as someone who is a big fan of the Luke Walton hire. I just think that getting the second overall pick is a bigger deal in both senses.
For me, the reason the Luke Walton hiring sticks out to me is
your neighbor's dog disagrees with that point.
I swear to God, this dog barks all damn day. I hate this dog so much. All right, quick tangent. you've seen my dog. She's like 60 pounds, whatever, and she could handle her business. I've honestly considered dropping her in that playpen they have out there for that dog. Just say, go have fun.
Okay, well, this got really dark really quickly.
All right, back to the matter at hand. But I love you, neighbors. But no. So the reason I would say Luke is the more important and the bigger story first and foremost, and then more important we can actually debate about. But the bigger story is, if heading into this season, especially about midway through the season, before Steve Kerr came back, if you were to list coaching candidates that would likely be available this offseason, wouldn't he top basically every list out there?
Well, after he took over for Steve Kerr, I would say, yeah. I think before that, I don't know that he was as high on people's lists.
Right. That's what I mean. Is it like in the middle of going, what did he go, 39-4?
Yeah, he was, if not the top candidate for most openings, he was definitely, for a younger team, he was the top candidate.
Right. And for the Lakers in particular, he had to, like Mitch said, that he was their only candidate that they were really interested in. They didn't have any interviews planned afterward, right?
That was rude. I sent in my resume and everything. You didn't have to call me out.
But the reason I bring all that up is, how long has it been since the Lakers got their guy? How long has it been since the Lakers have even kept their guy? Right, they lost Dwight. They lost Powell. You know, the Lakers, when they make all these offseason priority lists, it's been years since they actually, you know, got the guy that they were actually going to go after, got the top guy on the market. And in this case, it kind of...
Is it trade for Powell? I'm trying to think back.
What's that?
Is it trade for Powell? I'm trying to think back. When is the last time that they, like, indisputably got, like, the top option on the market for what they were trying to do?
Right.
I guess maybe it's the Dwight trade, because at the time his stock was a lot higher.
Right. Maybe Nash. Was, you know, he was a free agent. So that, you know, trading, I can't even count trading in that equation, right? Because the player doesn't have a choice. You're trading for the guy. So it's been since Steve Nash that the Lakers actually kept their or signed their top guy. And in this case, they didn't have to make some sign. They didn't have to make some grand gesture to get the guy. They didn't have to embarrass themselves in that fashion to get him. And behind closed doors, when nobody was really thinking about it, there they are. They got their guy with all, you know, and that to me is something that, you know, they can tell free agents that, hey, here's why it didn't work out with the other free agents. Here's how we convinced Luke to come. Cause they actually had to convince him, right? It was like a 6 or whatever hour meeting that they had to like lay out the groundwork as to how they're going to improve. So if they say to free agents, here's the exact selling points that we had for Luke, here's what we can sell you on. And that's something you can really build on moving forward. And while Luke is, you know, a great coaching candidate, and it's somebody that the fan base should be excited about, to me, the larger story is the Lakers kept or signed the top guy on the market for the first time in years.
Yeah, no, that's a big deal. I see your point with that. I still disagree, though. I just think that found money of the second overall pick, you're getting a really good player to add to your young core. I still think that that's the bigger deal, and that's both more important and the bigger story. But again, I don't disagree that them getting Luke is incredibly significant.
Mm-hmm. No, I would never. Anybody listening who would take that from what you've been saying, needs to clear out their ears. I feel like this is a pretty good time to get into some questions. Did anybody ask us if we were going to trade the pick?
I think we got some good ones actually.
Well, I was wondering if anybody asked if we should trade the pick, because that's where I was going to go next.
We got a different trade question, but go ahead. I guess let's talk about trading the pick.
Well, all right. So the reason I was going to bring up trading the pick is Mitch Kupchak went on the air today with AM570 Sports with Leanne Tweeden and I'm forgetting Reiter's.
Bill Reiter.
Bill Reiter's show this afternoon and basically said that they aren't really looking to trade the pick, which is something a lot of people, shouts to Colin Cowherd, have been Bill wondering. And Simmons. Yeah. Two guys that have no connection to the franchise whatsoever.
I don't know, dude. I feel like a Celtics fan and a national radio host probably have really good connections inside the Lakers front office.
Isn't Cowherd originally from the East Coast too? Like he just came over here.
I honestly don't know.
He was an ESPN guy. He was over there in Bristol for a long time. Anywho, but the reason I found that interesting was heading into the season, there was that Jim Buss quote that they felt that they had the perfect number of young guys. So you were kind of wondering, well, what did that mean? Did they want to take on another couple young guys in this draft if they kept their pick? It was good to hear Mitch kind of say, nah, there's nobody that we really feel we could target with this pick alone. And I don't think they want to bundle it with any other young assets. Was that how you took that what he was saying?
Yeah, that's absolutely how I took it. And I think that you just have to wonder, there are all these rumors out there of these guys that they're going to go get, but are the Bulls really going to trade Jimmy Butler for the number two pick? I don't think so. I don't think that they want to trade Jimmy Butler right now. Are the Pacers going to trade Paul George and tank? No, I don't think Larry Bird is ready to tank. That's never been his MO. I don't think that he has it in him, especially at his age. I don't think that he wants to sit through a rebuilding year. That's why they always make the moves that they make to at least get back to mediocrity. And and DeMarcus Cousins, Vlade Divac said they're not trading him. Now, that you could say for that, and you can say for Mitch, that how much of that is trying to get leverage, where they're trying to say, I'm not going to trade this thing to make it more desirable. It's like, oh, you're not that I want that now. That looks good. It's because people always want what they can't have, right? So you have to wonder how much of it is trying to create leverage for those assets, but it just doesn't, the trade package isn't there. You can say, like, till the cows come home, you can shout the Lakers want to trade their second overall pick for an all-star type player, but what all-star type player is on the is available?
Well, and on top of that, Mitch went into another reason that they don't want to do it is the financial flexibility. Yeah, they've worked to get to this point, right? They have $60 million in cap space. And then next year, when the cap goes up again, they have the room to sign another max guy, right? So they want to maintain that kind of flexibility. And I personally, it was great to hear that, right? It was great to, and with Mitch, usually he kind of speaks where you have to read between the lines and all that.
He says something and nothing simultaneously.
Yeah, he's great at it. And it's an actual skill. But today he was pretty concrete in saying, no, that's not really what we're doing. I was also going to add to your point about Boogie that their 2019 pick or something like that is completely unprotected at this point going to Philadelphia. So
something like that.
Right. And if you're going to trade somebody like Boogie, that means that you're hoping to keep all of your major picks moving forward, right? You're trying to rebuild with around all that youth. So there's no incentive for the Kings to move Boogie Cousins there.
Yeah, I mean, unless he's just like they just can't handle him anymore. Like but like that would speak, I think, more to them than him. You can't get rid of that talent just to get rid of it.
Right. The Lakers learned that by keeping Kobe when he was unhappy. Right.
Yeah. You have to figure out a way to work that out.
Right. Let's go. Do you have another question out there about the process?
We were talking about trades and how we thought it was kind of encouraging that Mitch Kupchak wants to let that second overall pick grow with the young roster. And I agree with that. We did get a question from @JohnnyBerry, frequent, I think, viewer of the show. I've seen questions from him before. Yep. Is a Randall and Clarkson package after Clarkson is signed the most likely trade bait in accelerating the rebuild?
I mean, yeah, they aren't going to trade
Russell. I think if they're going to trade young guys, I think that's the package, right?
Right.
But how much can you get for that is the question, and is it worth giving up on those guys and not seeing what they can be under Luke?
My general stance on trading any of the young guys is you could make the argument that this is as low as their trade value is ever going to be, right? Hold on, I'm going to close my door. I'm either going to close my door or kick this dog, one or the other. I'll be right back.
Okay, so I guess I'll just talk. I think Randall and Clarkson, I think that they are the most likely, if the Lakers had their pick of what are the two guys that they're going to trade. I think going forward, Clarkson now, after this summer, all of a sudden becomes the most expensive of those young guys. And so I think if you're going to make a trade, then he becomes kind of a logical candidate just in terms of making salaries work. And then I think Randall just has the lowest stock of any of the rest of the, like, kind of major pieces that you trade. Because really, like, Larry Nance Jr. is a nice player. I don't know that he gets you that much in the trade. Anthony Brown doesn't get you anything in a trade at this point. So Randall, out of him, Russell, and Simmons/Ingram, Randall is kind of the highest stock or the lowest stock out of those guys. And so the guy that the Lakers, I think, would be most willing to include in a package for a player.
So what,
but at the same time, does it get you that player if it's Randall?
What I was going to say is you have a core of young players coming off of what? Would they win 17 games off the top of my head?
I believe so.
Yeah, so do you have a core of young players coming off of a 17-win system in which and throughout most of which the head coach was crapping on throughout the entire year, right? So this is about as low a value as these guys are ever going to have. So why try to trade them now, right? Anybody who's ever dealt with stocks or whatever would say you trade stuff when it's at peak value. You don't sell off stuff when it's in the basement. And we could look back on right now and say this is when they were in the absolute basement in terms of value. And in that respect, I there's no point in trying to speed up the rebuild, especially when you consider other teams out there. Like, is there anybody that they could get and compete? We're watching this Oklahoma City Golden State series right now. There's nobody that the Lakers could pick up that they would say, all right, I like them against those guys. There's not a single player on.
Yeah,
our
really. That's a good point. I think literally you could take any player in the league and put them on the Lakers, and I don't know that they would be able to beat either of those teams unless, like, you know, maybe it's Curry and you take him off of Golden State and put him on the Lakers. But if you just cloned Curry and put him on the Lakers and then have them play the Warriors, it would not go very well.
And even further to that point, there's nobody on the actual trade market, anybody who might possibly be available that would.
You mean the Lakers couldn't trade for Curry? You don't think so?
You know, I think he's kind of untouchable at this point.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Let's talk to our Nike correspondents and ask if they've called Under Armour about signing Steph Curry away and see how that goes over. All right. Do you have anything else to add on that question? Or you want to move on to the next
one? No, I made my point. So I think the next question that's kind of everyone is asking, and I think everybody's wondering right now and debating, and that's been the big topic since the Lakers got the second overall pick, although it's kind of less important since it's the second overall than versus first overall, is at BDell 8431. Okay. Sorry. My screen's a little small. Asks so if I got your at wrong, I apologize, Brandel. The lottery, who's the better fit, Simmons or Ingram?
I'll start. I'll say the better fit right off the bat is Ingram.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I agree with you.
You could slide him right into that starting five and it would be, you know, Clarkson, Russell, or Russell Clarkson, however you want to play those guys. Ingram, Randall, and then whichever five right now would probably be Tarik Black based on current roster build or roster construct. Whereas with Simmons, you'd have to do some finagling and hope that he and Randall can play together. And there are legitimate questions as to whether or not those guys could ever play together because of how poor a shooter that both those guys are.
And that's another reason, going back to the last question, that I think that Randall is kind of most on the block as well, because the Lakers may be having maybe drafting his replacement just by virtue of that being the best player available to them.
Now, somebody brought this up, and I honestly, I can't believe it hasn't really crossed my mind yet, is Randall is pretty perfectly built. I think it was, Herbie Verstinks, I think, was who brought it up. But he said that, you know, why aren't we thinking of Randall as energy guy off the bench if Simmons was to start and be his replacement there, right? And really, if you think about it, the way Randall plays, he'd be perfect for that role, right? So I don't even know, even if you do draft Simmons, I don't know if you absolutely have to trade Randall.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And he does kind of fit that mold of he could be kind of a super bench big, with, especially with his rebounding ability. A lot of those guys are really good rebounders. And I think that he's a guy that you could, you know, with the second unit, really push the break, and you could experiment with him that way, I guess. But do you really want to have like two of your best assets be in the same position, especially when you have Nance Jr. as well? And so obviously you can move Randall or Nance Jr., but it's just hard to see them keeping all three.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think eventually they would look to make a trade if they do have Simmons, but I don't think they make that trade right away for the reasons we just spoke about in the last topic as to whether or not their value is at the proper spot to be traded.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Any other questions here?
So that kind of leads us into our next question from at Johnny Berry. Will Simmons try to force his way to LA? And I think that we know the answer to that. They are trying to force their way to LA. His reps are pretty clearly leaking that scuttlebutt about him wanting to end up on the Lakers so that he can get a better shoe deal.
Right. It's funny because there seems to be this dichotomy in how people feel about this. LA people or big market people tend to say, yeah, of course these guys want to go. That here's the contract stipulations that we could actually point to, right, and say that this is an actual thing. And then people in small markets say, well, Kevin Durant's doing all right in Oklahoma City. LeBron's doing all right in Cleveland. You know, that doesn't matter as much. But the thing I say to the people
go ahead, finish your point.
Well, the thing that I point to people who say, you know, Durant, LeBron, whatever, is I don't want to bank on myself being – I have to be LeBron James to be profitable at that level, right? I have to be the best player in the history – in my generation or in the history of the city that I'm playing in to get that kind of contract, right? Whereas in LA, you're dealing with a little more leeway as to how that contract might play out.
Yeah, well, number one, they even said that Russell got like a $1 million a year bump just for getting drafted by the Lakers, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think to your point of you have to be LeBron or you have to be Kevin Durant or you have to be one of those guys like Steph Curry. Golden State's not a small market, but you have to be like one of those type of guys to get a signature shoe and get the signature endorsements in a small market. And my favorite thing about that is, you know, that people were like have this mass funeral last year for the advantages of small market, for the advantages of big markets when like Greg freaking Monroe signed with the Bucks. Like superstars don't want to go to LA or New York anymore. That was like my favorite people point to. They're like, well, the advantages of big markets are really dead now, as you can see by Greg Monroe signing with the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding? What? Wait, what?
Didn't the Lakers like pass up on a second meeting with Monroe? Like he wanted to meet again or something like that. And they're like, you're Greg
Monroe. I don't remember that. I remember he turned the Knicks down because he heard they wanted to play him at center and he just passed on. He just said peace on the meeting. But I don't know. It's just like, it's funny to me that he's the anecdotal example being used to say stars don't want to go to big markets anymore. Like Greg Monroe,
what are we gonna do?
Greg Monroe could have signed in Los Angeles and New York, and I don't think that he would have a signature shoe deal.
That's a very solid point. To answer the actual question, of course he's doing whatever he can. The choice is Philadelphia and Los Angeles. Like, it's a better fan base in Los Angeles. Like, it's a lot more laid back. They booed Santa Claus in Philadelphia, like famously, and they're proud about it. They're like, they're really happy. They're like, yeah, bleep you, Santa Claus. I don't know if that's their, that's probably not their accent.
I don't think that that's the official Sixers chant either, but I could be wrong.
Bleep you, Santa. No. You have the weather of Los Angeles. You have the real estate.
Which, like, I've heard is pretty nice for the most part.
I looked outside today, and aside from that yapping Pomeranian outside, it's pretty damn lovely.
Yeah, right? It's so, a nice day out today. Ben Simmons, you might be making the right call.
As soon as we're done here, I gotta go to the store. I'm gonna barbecue in my backyard. Like it's a really nice day out right now. You have all that going on, and then the other thing too is you look at the winning histories of both franchises, and people always say, like, you know, the Laker fans always point to the past. Let's look at the immediate past of Philadelphia. They're coming off of a guy who people legitimately, you know, thought he was fired for trying to lose too much, right? Whereas Mitch Kupchak, when you hear him talk about the last few years, it sounds like he was Steven Adams after Draymond Green hit him in the balls. Like, that's
like
what,
his
that's
voice drops a pitch, like his eyes go distant, like he starts staring through the. It's that Ben Affleck meme from that Batman versus Superman interview where they ask him about the negative reviews the movie's getting, and he just.
So Superman's trying to salvage it in the background. Yeah. But no, there's no, you saw it with Jahlil Okafor last year, right? When the Lakers passed up on him and he wound up in Philadelphia. That's how that's gonna play out again this year if you know, for whoever gets taken first overall this year. It's why I wondered last year why Philadelphia wouldn't try to trade up with the Lakers to try to get that spot with a few more pieces, but I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. Anything else? Any other questions before?
This was actually an interesting one, and it kind of takes us in a bunch of different directions because there was that news last night that Luke Walton wasn't going to be able to be at most of the Lakers draft workouts, yeah, mm-hmm. because he's still doing his season in Golden State. So at 22C Mac asks, no, I know he's getting flash drives of the workouts, but how much of a say do you think Luke has in the draft process? And so I'll let you answer it after, but I don't think that it's very much. I think that it's similar to if it sounded like last year, Mitch had some, I forget who tweeted it out, but there was an article last year where Mitch talked kind of about their collaboration and draft process. And it sounded like, yeah, they kind of talk to the coaches run the workouts, but it's mostly the front office because they've been the one watching the tape. They've been the ones watching the tape all year. They've been the ones researching these guys all year. And ultimately it's their job. So I don't know that any coach was going to have that much say in the pre-draft process. So I don't know that it's a huge deal that Luke is not going to be there. And also, secondly, I think Luke, you know, basically the Lakers are picking, you know, Mitch talked about he doesn't think that there's as much of a gap between 2 and 3 as a lot of people do, but I think he kind of just has to say that for leverage purposes.
Yep.
And so they're basically going to take Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram. And so I don't know how much it matters that Luke's there for those workouts. And mm-hmm. then for the 32nd overall pick, like, I mean, I don't know that Luke's going to be the guy that sways who they kind of take a shot on at that spot.
Right. This is the kind of thing that they would have spoken about in the actual meeting, right? Luke wouldn't have signed on if he wasn't okay with being, you know, kind of left out of these workouts or having to watch from the outside in during these workouts. And then there's the other thing of the reason front offices prefer to be highly in charge of this kind of thing is coaches come and go. There's no guarantee. We all hope that Luke is here for the long haul and that he's this, you know, coaching savior that we're told he might be. And then if he isn't
coaching savior, yeah, I'm no. sorry. I just pictured Jesus in a suit on the sidelines, like trying to coach the team.
Luke would try to coach a team in sandals. Like, he's that kind of guy. And then I also thought of a meme of, like, if they got Ettore Messina, like, the coaching messiah, Messina.
Oh, my Anywho. God. I'm just picturing Luke glowing on the sidelines. Just peace be to you, my draft picks.
Go forth, D'Angelo.
And score 50 points.
But the other thing is coaches tend to be too close. This is my argument against having coach team president situations is the coach tends to be too close to the situation to be able to make unbiased assessments of players, right? And yeah. And with Walton kind of being a little more, you know, distanced right now, it's kind of a nice thing that he comes in and everybody's on the same page as soon as he gets there, whereas he'll have spent a lot more time around their draft pick who worked out for them than the other guys on the team. So
yeah.
No, I don't. It's something that sounds like a story when you read the headline, but it's not really a story.
Yeah, it's really like functionally there aren't that many head coaches that have, I think, a ton of say over these draft workouts anyway. So as long as they have capable people running the workouts, which I can't imagine is incredibly difficult, yeah. Or like even in the top like 50 hardest things a coach has to do, then right. I think they'll be okay.
Right. I just went by that tweet that we talked about before we went on the air. all right. I'm looking for one more question. Otherwise, we can get into this is a good one. I'm picking this one.
Okay.
At Joshua Lebeck, okay. Or just Joshua on his profile. Which free agents will gel best with Coach Walton's philosophy? And what is Coach Walton's philosophy? What is his coaching philosophy? And well, this is interesting to me. I want to just start the point, but
go for it.
We've heard a lot of like he'll so and so will work good in Walton's coaching system and Walton system this and Walton system that. And my wonder is Walton doesn't really have a system. Like he's coming from Steve Kerr's, which is a blend of a few systems. But at the end of the day, we don't know exactly what Walton's system might be. So it's impossible to really answer this question. My response or my immediate response when I saw the question was any of them, just bring me the free agents and let's make it work from there.
Yeah. And it sounds like he wants to run a similar system to Golden State. So you look at kind of the centers that they have and they're all just kind of tall guys that can protect the rim. Bogut's a pretty good passer. Azili's more of like a pick and roll type player. And so you would think that the team looks at guys like that because it looks like center is now going to be their main target in free agency after the outcome of the draft, mm-hmm. because it sounds like it's probably going to be Brandon Ingram that ends up with them, even though I still think that there's a chance Philly takes Ingram just because of how hard it would be to like kind of move on from four like lottery pick front court prospects at once. Not that they would have to trade all of them if they drafted right. Ben Simmons, but they have four guys kind of in that front court that they already invested a lot of assets in. And so they have almost even more of a fit issue than the Lakers do.
Right. And I was going to add, it's the same issue that the Lakers have, is that none of those guys have the kind of trade value that you would like to see from a top end prospect. But go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
No, and I agree. So I think either way, whether they take Simmons or they take Ingram, though, I think center is now all of a sudden their big area of need in free agency. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you're looking at guys that can basically you're looking at rim protectors that can play next to either Simmons or Randall, because those guys are not going to be standout defenders next year. And so you're looking for guys that are athletic can kind of stay with them a little bit or stay like clean up mistakes, kind of what we thought Roy Hibbert could be last year, minus the athletic part. And so I think that they're going to be looking at guys. There have been a lot of rumors about Azili there. I think that they're going to look at Biombo. I think that Hassan Whiteside is probably number one on their list of targets at this point. Just like this is all like my opinion, not mm-hmm. not any actual reporting. But
we don't do reporting.
Just the way I phrased it, it kind of sounded like I had some source, and I don't have any source. I'm just guessing. I would think Hassan Whiteside would be a logical candidate, even coming off of the injury. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where I would start to look, is I think like some type of rim-protecting center, but those guys are hard to find.
Right. I would agree for the most part that they would go center first if they do land Ingram. If they do land Simmons, I would honestly do flips. I'd participate in National Send a Nude Day. If they landed Batum, I wouldn't. Your face. But I
was like, what free agent do you think that's going to recruit? I don't.
But if they drafted Simmons, if Simmons fell to them, and then they were able to convince Batum to come to the Lakers, all of a sudden you have a really fun team. Like that's a team that would just get out and run and run and run. And that'd be incredible. But yeah, if it does, and it does look like most likely Ingram will fall to the Lakers, unless you're Ry Cole, who's been reverse jinxing basically every possible.
what's his name? Brett Brown, the Sixers head coach. I saw an interview with him this morning where he compared Simmons to LeBron and Magic Johnson in the same sentence. And they're not somebody's going to pass up on that guy.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, no, we're going to pass on the combination of Magic Johnson and LeBron.
Yeah, who would want that guy on your team?
I don't know. I just that seems like too unselfish of a player. if you're throwing both those mindsets in there, they're never going to shoot.
Right. All right. So yeah, I would say Whiteside. A lot of people like Biombo. I would really hesitate throwing a bunch of money at Biombo. I haven't seen anything from that guy that makes
you
me
would say Biombo to Biombo.
Or no, I'm thinking of Azili. And Biombo falls in the same category too. Like both those guys.
The throwing the max at them just seems insane. It's like the contract almost no max contract you throw out this summer can end up looking horrible just because of how much the cap's going up. But it would be an overpay. You're going to have to overpay to get them.
Right, right. And the other small forward prospect I like, and Domin is going to hate me for saying this, and then Jacob Rube is going to high five me for saying this, is I really like Harrison Barnes. I still believe in Harry B. he's been pretty impressive. Like, they don't ask much for the guy, but it's pretty rare that I've watched him and said, yeah, there's no way I want that guy on my team. There's a lot of physical tools there that I think you could build off of.
And hey, if the question was which free agents fit Luke's system or the system he wants to run, we know Harrison Barnes fits in that system.
Right.
Now, we don't know how he fits in that system when he's asked to play more of a role in it, which is kind of my major question mark with him. But I think that it's become fashionable to kind of crap on Harrison Barnes because of the whole like max contract thing, and max contract just like there's this connotation that comes with it that you have to be a superstar to live up to a max contract. And this summer, that's just not the case. And he does have valuable skills. He can shoot a little bit. He can guard fours. He can guard threes. I think that he is a valuable player to have on your team. I don't know that I'm not the biggest fan of signing him, but he also wouldn't be the worst signing. He's definitely not my top choice. I think Batum would be my top choice for a wing player, but I don't think that he would be the worst guy in the world to have. And he does have the added benefit of he's relatively young, and he does come in and he knows Luke's system well, and he can help teach it. You would think maybe.
That's kind of the point I was about to make, is that's an old Phil Jackson trick, is that he would bring role players from prior triangle teams and help them, you know, bring them over so that he's not building completely from scratch with his entire team when he's teaching his system. Not to say that Walton is going to run the triangle, only that if he does have a set in mind, if he could bring Azili, if he could bring Barnes, that Walton could bring those guys over and say, all right, just pay attention to what these guys do. And then we can build from there.
I guess the counter argument to that is if Harrison Barnes just starts shouting at D'Angelo. I saw Sam Esfandiari making this point earlier in the year where Harrison Barnes knows the Golden State system. And so his response to things is just to scream at Julius Randle, hey, play like Draymond. Or Russell, like, hey, what? Be Steph.
I think it's good coaching. I don't see what the problem would be there. Speaking of coaching, you tweeted out, I thought it was a really good tweet, what Luke should be doing in these games, you know, while he's not technically the Lakers coach yet. Go ahead and let's go. I'm going to be Durant. Well, actually, better yet, Durant's out there somewhere. I'm going to be Kerr, and I'm going to ask you questions about stuff going on the court, and then you're going to give Luke's response, all right?
Okay, that's what we're going to do. All right.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. And then we'll wrap this up pretty soon. So,
okay.
All right. So Luke, we're having a lot of trouble with Westbrook turning the corner on screens. What should we hedge more? Should we trap off the screen? What do you think?
Hey, Kevin, you should come to LA. It's going to be, they have a lot of cap room. We can add good pieces around you.
Damn it, Luke. All right. All right. Next question. All right. Kevin Durant, the guy you just screamed at, is killing us in the pinch post. What do we do here?
Kevin, I've seen your most effective spots. I can help you do really well there.
Perfect. Scene. No, I would love it. That'd be great. They need to mic up Luke Walton for this.
Just he's holding up like a sign that says KD2LA on the sidelines.
On the back of a student's hashtag KD2LA.
He rips off his jacket at the end of the series, and it's a Kevin Durant Lakers jersey.
Yeah, perfect.
It's not tampering because he's not technically the Lakers coach yet. I think. I don't know.
It doesn't seem like tampering to me. I don't see any problem with it.
See, it seems to. I don't see why anyone would have a problem with that.
None whatsoever. All right, so we'll go ahead and wrap this up. A couple last little tidbits of news. It was cool to see Russell and Randall get chosen for the Team USA Select team. The reason I bring that up is I just think it's a really good thing for any player to be around other really good players, right? And we saw the effect that being around Team USA had on Kevin Durant that one year. And then you go on down the line, Anthony Davis the following year, all that good stuff. And if Russell and Randall are going to be in that same environment, that's phenomenal. And
yeah, I think that's a great thing for both of them and for the Lakers, that they're going to be around the best players in the world this summer and scrimmaging against them and picking up pointers, you would think.
Right. And that's the other thing, is that when you're around those kinds of guys, like everybody from that, was it 2006 team, the Redeem team?
No, 2008 was the Redeem team.
So that 2008 team, you had a whole bunch of guys. Everybody was saying how Kobe was pulling so-and-so aside. And while Kobe was taking little tidbits away from those guys, he was also, you know, divulging little aspects of his game that he thought could help all these guys. And if, like, Julius Randle learned, you know, how any little tidbit about how LeBron handles the transition, right?
I believe Draymond's going to be there too, and that's the guy that everybody keeps saying they want him to play like. So if he just attaches himself to Draymond that whole camp and somehow comes out of it not mentally scarred, then you know.
Yeah, if there's any kind of coach or assistant coach there, you know, with that team, I'm just always like, Randall, go stand with Draymond. Go get over there. You know, Russell, go with Steph. Go with that guy.
Just follow him around.
Get him water.
During the scrimmage, that's what they're yelling at them.
Yeah. Nice shot, Russell. Don't get him. Get Steph water. He looks thirsty. And then the other tidbit of news was D'Angelo Russell getting named to the second team all rookie. I was a little taken aback by how few, you know, first team votes he got, but at the end of the day, it's an all rookie team in an absolutely stacked class. That's kind of how I fall back on this. And then there's, like we mentioned earlier, the narrative surrounding the Lakers all season was Byron Scott just absolutely shitting on D'Angelo Russell every chance he got. And that's not, you know, when he's the guy talking to the media, as much as he talks to the media, that's not going to bode well for somebody's voting chances.
And that the leaked video thing happened at the end of the year. Because see, what Jahlil Okafor did that was clutch was he did his leaked video at the beginning of the year so that people had forgotten about it by the time that it was time to all rookie vote. And
you called it clutch.
That was a non-rookie move. That was really smart on Jahlil Okafor. Yeah, that was a savvy vet move. If you're going to have your scandal, you get that out of the way early in the year.
It's like Alabama losing early in a football season because they know that if they just win enough games, they're going to be right back in it by the end of the year. That's a solid.
And I also thought that like the big news, like some big news today was Marcelo Huertas getting one all rookie team vote. That was amazing to me. I did not think that was going to happen, and it's like a dream come true, honestly.
I think he got his vote. No, Bucher.
It was Rick Bucher. So shout out to Rick Bucher. You made a lot of Lakers fans' day with that one.
He has an open invitation at any point to come on this show. He'll never listen to me. He'll never hear this at all. But he has an open invitation just for voting for Marcelo Huertas.
Somebody's going to tweet at him now.
All right. So this was fun. It had been way too long. We promise we're going to get these going on a more regular basis. As the off season, it feels like the regular season because the regular seasons have sucked recently. But as the off season goes along, and as we get closer to the draft, and as more news comes out about assistant coaches and which way the Lakers are leaning, and if they're looking at trades and all that good stuff, we're going to be right here. This was the Lakers Lounge Live Edition. I am Anthony Irwin, and that was Harrison Fagan.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, guys.